Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
The Whitaker House sat alone at the end of a gravel drive that had been worn into the land long before asphalt reached that part of the county. Cornfields stretched out behind it in late summer rows, and in winter the wind had nothing to break its stride until it met the broad face of the farmhouse and moved around it like water around a stone. Eleanor Whitaker built the house in 1893 with her husband Thomas, on land his family had been working since before the railroad cut through the next town over. The original structure was simple and square, two stories with a narrow staircase near the center and a second floor hallway that ran straight across the front of the house. Years later, a porch was added, then enclosed, then opened again. The kitchen was expanded sometime in the 1940s, but the bones of it remained the same. Thomas died in 1908 after an infection that would have been survivable a decade later. Eleanor did not remarry. She raised four children in that house, managed the land herself when she had to, and lived long enough to see grandchildren running through the same hallway where her own children once had. She died in an upstairs bedroom in 1946, and no one in the family remembers a time when the house did not feel occupied. It was never described as haunted in dramatic terms. No one told stories about doors slamming or dishes flying from shelves. Instead, there were small acknowledgments passed down casually between cousins at reunions and whispered between siblings when they stayed overnight as children. The back staircase always creaked in a distinct rhythm late at night, as though someone were climbing it slowly, pausing at the landing before turning toward the second floor hallway. More than one child had woken to the faint sound of humming drifting from the kitchen long after the adults had gone to bed. Several family members admitted that when they shut off the lights downstairs and glanced toward the top of the staircase, they sometimes had the sense that someone stood there already waiting for them to come up. No one panicked over it. They said it was Eleanor, great-grandma Eleanor, who had outlived nearly everyone and who, according to family lore, had never been particularly sentimental in life. She had been practical, stern when necessary, and fiercely attached to the land. It did not feel unreasonable to suggest she might still be attached to the house. Children accepted it more easily than adults. When they were small, they sometimes referred to the lady upstairs, and no one rushed to correct them. The explanation was simple and consistent. That's just great-grandma checking on things. If the house passed through the family without ever leaving the bloodline, one son stayed and inherited it outright. Later, a granddaughter bought it from her father when he moved into town. Then another branch of the family moved back after a divorce and lived there for several years before relocating again. It was never sold to strangers. It remained Whitaker property, even when the land around it was parceled and reduced. Over time, the stories became less like warnings and more like traditions. People spoke about the house the way others might speak about weather patterns, something consistent and mildly inconvenient, but familiar enough not to fear. If someone felt watched from the upstairs hallway, they would mention it in passing and move on. If the kitchen grew inexplicably cold in early October, someone would shrug and say Eleanor always did prefer the fall. It was only when the last of Eleanor's grandchildren died that the house grew quiet in a different way. Margaret Whitaker, Eleanor's youngest granddaughter and the final direct link to that first generation, passed away in her sleep at 92. The funeral was small, mostly extended family and neighbors who had known the Whitakers for decades. Afterward, her belongings were boxed and sorted in the farmhouse dining room beneath a chandelier that had hung there since the 1920s. Among the boxes were albums, heavy, cloth-bound photo albums with brittle pages and black corners that held photographs from nearly every decade since the house was built. There were tintypes from the late 1800s, sepia portraits from the early 1900s, black-and-white family gatherings on the front lawn, and later color photographs with rounded white borders from the 1960s and 70s. Margaret's great-granddaughter Claire volunteered to take the albums home and digitize them so copies could be shared with the rest of the family. She lived two counties over and had more patience for scanning and labeling than most of her cousins. She loaded the boxes into her car that afternoon and drove away from the gravel drive, watching the farmhouse recede in her rearview mirror. The second floor windows caught the late light reflecting the sky in pale squares. She had grown up in that house during summers. She had heard the staircase at night. She had once woken to the distinct feeling that someone had been standing in the doorway of her bedroom, only to find the hallway empty when she turned on the lamp. She had never been afraid of it. It was simply part of the Whitaker house. It was not until weeks later, seated at her dining table, with the first album open beside her scanner, that she began to notice something no one else had ever mentioned. In nearly every photograph of the farmhouse taken across decades by different hands, there was a figure in the upstairs window. Not in every picture, but enough, and always in the same place. Claire did not notice it in the first album. The earliest photographs were formal and stiff, taken long before anyone thought to capture the house itself as a subject. Most were portraits. Eleanor seated in a high-backed chair, children standing in front of a neutral backdrop, farmhands lined along a fence. The farmhouse appeared only in the margins, partially cropped behind shoulders and hats. It was not until she reached a photograph dated 1919, identified in pencil on the back as Harvest Supper, that she paused. The image showed the entire family gathered on the front lawn. Long wooden tables had been dragged outside, and men in suspenders stood beside women in dark dresses, their sleeves rolled to the elbow. The house loomed behind them in soft focus. Claire adjusted the brightness on her computer screen to compensate for the fading ink and leaned closer. The upstairs windows were small and evenly spaced along the second floor, each framed in white. In the far left window, there appeared to be a darker shape interrupting the pale interior. It was not distinct enough to identify as a person. It could have been curtain fabric, shadow, a trick of exposure. She nearly dismissed it. But something about the placement gave her pause. The shape stood slightly off-center near the right side of the window frame, where someone might stand if looking out toward the yard. She enlarged the image slightly, careful not to distort the grain. The dark interruption remained ambiguous. It did not resemble a face. There were no visible features, only density. She moved on. It was not until two albums later, scanning a color photograph from the late 1960s, that the shape appeared again. This time the image was clearer and showed her grandfather as a boy standing proudly beside a newly painted porch railing. The house behind him looked brighter, the white trim catching the afternoon light. And in that same far-left upstairs window, there was again a slight darkening near the edge of the frame. Claire froze the image and pulled up the 1919 photograph on her screen for comparison. The windows were identical in position. The dormer had not yet been added in 1919, but the spacing was the same. The shape, faint as it was, occupied the same relative corner. Her first instinct was technical. Perhaps that window reflected light differently at certain angles. Perhaps the interior paint was darker in that room? She checked other photographs from the same era. Some showed empty windows. Others showed lace curtains drawn halfway across. In a few, nothing interrupted the pale square at all. But in enough of them, across decades, there was something. Never centered, never dramatic, always slightly to the side. She began paying closer attention as she scanned. A wedding photo from 1982 showed the house decorated with white ribbons and folding chairs set across the lawn. In the upstairs window, faint but present, the same density hovered near the right edge of the frame. A candid snapshot from 1994, taken with a disposable camera during a 4th of July picnic, showed cousins mid-laugh in the foreground. The image quality was grainy, colors oversaturated. Still, the window held a subtle darkness. It was easy to miss. If she had not been looking for it, she might never have noticed. She flipped through the remaining albums, no longer scanning immediately, but instead holding each photograph up to the light first. Her dining room grew quiet as the afternoon passed. Outside her own window, traffic moved along the county road, distant and irrelevant. The earliest photographs where the house stood empty were the ones that unsettled her most. One from 1937 showed the farmhouse alone after a winter storm. Snow piled along the porch steps. No people stood in the yard. No animals moved across the drifts. The photographer had framed the entire front facade deliberately, and in the far left upstairs window, faint but unmistakable, was that same dark interruption. She leaned back in her chair and studied the arrangement of images across her table. Decades separated them. Different film types, different lighting conditions, different people behind the camera. The house changed in small ways over time. A porch railing replaced, shutters added, paint colors updated, the dormer window installed in the 1950s. But the far left upstairs window remained in its original position, and in several photographs spanning nearly 80 years, something stood in it. It was never clear enough to call a person, but it was never consistent with the rest of the window either. Claire did not immediately jump to the explanation everyone in the family would have offered. She did not say Eleanor's name out loud. Instead, she pulled out a small framed portrait she remembered seeing on the farmhouse piano for years. It was one of the only formal photographs of Eleanor Whittaker taken late in her life, when high collars and pinned hair were still common in rural counties long after fashion had shifted elsewhere. Eleanor stood stiffly in the portrait, shoulders squared, gaze steady but unreadable. Her hair was parted cleanly down the middle and drawn back tightly. The collar of her dark dress rose high along her neck, the fabric thick and unadorned. Claire placed the portrait beside the scanned images on her laptop screen. The shapes in the window were too indistinct to compare directly. There was no visible face, no detail of clothing. But the posture implied in those interruptions, the slight angle, the placement near the right side of the frame, suggested someone standing with composure, not leaning or slouching, watching. Not the yard broadly, but the people in it. Claire realized then that she had photographs of the house taken by her own phone the previous summer during Margaret's 90th birthday celebration. She had captured the farmhouse at dusk when the sky turned lavender over the fields. She opened her cloud storage and scrolled until she found the image. The house stood illuminated by warm interior light, windows glowing softly against the evening. She enlarged the upstairs row. The far left window was lit from within, and near its right edge, just before the reflection overtook the glass, was a faint, vertical density interrupting the light. Subtle enough to question, present enough to recognize. Claire felt something shift, not in the room around her, but in her understanding of the house she had known all her life. The stories told at reunions about footsteps and humming had always been treated as shared folklore, something half believed and half dismissed. But photographs were different. They did not participate in imagination the same way memory did. They recorded what stood before them, even when no one was looking for it. Claire did not tell anyone about the photographs right away. She finished scanning the remaining albums over the next several days, labeling each file carefully by year and event. The window appeared intermittently across the decades, never constant, never entirely absent for long. There were stretches where no interruption showed at all, and then it would return in the next photograph taken from the yard occupying that same narrow position near the right edge of the upstairs frame. The consistency unsettled her more than frequency would have. If it had appeared in every image, it could be explained away as some structural quirk of the glass. If it had appeared only once or twice, it could be dismissed as shadow. Instead, it arrived irregularly, as though choosing when to be present. 2 weeks later, Claire drove back to the farmhouse alone. The house stood, as it always had, weathered but upright, the porch boards sun-bleached and slightly uneven. The fields beyond it were stubbled from harvest, the horizon unbroken. She parked near the barn and walked toward the front yard, holding her phone loosely at her side. The far left upstairs window looked unremarkable in daylight. From the ground, it was simply another square of glass framed in white. The dormer installed in the 1950s sat slightly to its right, altering the roof line but not the position of the original windows. Claire stood where so many of the older photographs must have been taken and lifted her phone to capture the same angle. She did not zoom in immediately. Instead, she lowered the device and studied the house with her eyes alone. There was no visible movement behind the glass, no curtain drawn, no light flickering within. The house did not appear animated. It appeared settled. She stepped onto the porch and let herself inside with the spare key Margaret had once hidden in a tin near the back door. The interior smelled faintly of wood and old paper, the familiar scent of a house that had been closed for several days but not abandoned. The staircase rose in the same narrow line described in the earliest letters Eleanor had written to her sister. Claire remembered reading one once, the ink faded but legible. "The stairs creak terribly at night, though I am alone." She climbed them slowly. The second floor hallway felt smaller than she remembered from childhood. The far left bedroom door stood closed, its paint slightly chipped near the handle. Eleanor's room. That was what it had always been called, even long after it stopped functioning as a primary bedroom. Claire opened the door and stepped inside. The room was spare. A narrow bed sat against one wall, covered in a faded quilt stitched decades ago. A small dresser stood near the window. The walls were pale, the paint uneven from age. Nothing in the space suggested occupation beyond what had been left behind intentionally. She crossed to the window and stood where the dark interruption would have appeared from the yard. From inside, the glass showed only the reflection of the room behind her and the fields beyond. The angle from the yard would have placed a figure standing slightly to the right of where she now stood. She shifted her position. There. If someone stood between the window and the interior wall, just near the frame, their outline would be faint from the outside. Not centered, not dramatic, just present enough to alter the light. Claire did not feel watched. She did not feel cold. What she felt was proximity. The realization that the photographs had never shown a face because a face had never been required. The figure had not leaned forward to be seen. It had simply occupied the space, looking outward from the same place again and again across decades. She lifted her phone and took a photograph from inside the room, facing outward toward the yard. The afternoon light was softer now, angling across the fields. When she lowered the phone and glanced at the screen, the image showed the empty yard and the gravel drive beyond. Nothing stood behind her, nothing reflected in the glass. She did not take another photo. Instead, she turned off the bedroom light and stepped into the hallway, leaving the door open behind her. The house remained quiet as she descended the stairs and stepped back outside. Before getting into her car, she turned once more toward the facade. The upstairs windows reflected the sky in pale rectangles. For a brief moment, as a cloud passed across the sun, the far left window darkened more than the others. Then the light shifted again. Even. Ordinary. Claire did not zoom in this time. She drove away with the photographs still saved to her phone and the scanned images waiting on her computer at home. She would eventually show them to her cousins. Some would see what she saw. Others would attribute it to reflection, dust, film exposure, the angle of afternoon light. The debate would remain polite and unresolved, as most family debates are. But no one would deny that the house had always felt inhabited. No one would deny that Eleanor Whittaker had been known for standing at that upstairs window watching the fields long after her children were grown. And no one would be able to explain why, in photograph after photograph, spanning nearly a century, something continued to stand there. Not emerging, not fading, simply present, looking outward.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.